The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
We are back, and we are full.
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
There was a life-size version of a razor on my screen right now. That's really great. Anyway, what's up, everybody?
Hopefully everyone had a happy and healthy Thanksgiving holiday break. Hopefully you've bought your Rogue One tickets.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Sounds like we're going to be doing another later show.
Yeah, I was going to say, another Thursday we miss. That's in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll try to remind you next week.
That's so funny. This is why we haven't hit our 200th episode this year yet.
The end of the year is tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, whenever Marvel releases a new movie.
No, exactly.
I might as well say Disney.
Yeah.
Compass it all.
Oh, man, that's right. We got to look into some work for the end of year stuff, by the way. But we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, it's that time of the year,
which usually ends up rolling into the beginning of the next year.
I mean, you know what? That's probably the best time to do it. You know?
Yeah.
So make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow us on our social media accounts. On the homepage of Declick Nation, you'll find icons for our Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google+. You can subscribe to the newsletter as well. We encourage you to. And also, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn Radio. Just search for Comic Book Chronicles. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us. Do it today. And make sure to buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise from our shop. Go to shop.cspn.us. So, we missed last week, of course, because the show fell on a Thursday, which is Thanksgiving. So we have 2 weeks worth of books to review this week. But before we get to that, our Agent 70 attended a comic book convention in the not too distant past.
Right. It was the weekend before Thanksgiving. So I attended, full disclosure, I attended with a press pass, the New Jersey Comic Expo. I'm holding up a copy of the program. The New Jersey Comic Expo was held at the New Jersey Convention and Expo Center in Edison, New Jersey on November 19th and 20th of 2016. This was the second show of its kind. Last year I was invited as a member of the Comic Book Press to attend the inaugural New Jersey Comic Expo, and I can tell you that they have made great strides from last year to this year in terms of their attendance, in terms of their guests, and in terms of the number of vendors that were in attendance. So just very quickly, I'm just going to run through my notes and obviously we're going to have a year-end wrap-up of my comic book convention travels, same as I did in 2015. We'll have one for 2016. Just very quickly of note, as I mentioned, there were a lot more vendors for the second annual show of the New Jersey Comic Expo, because there was definitely some good word of mouth being spread from the first one. There was a diverse guest list. There were fewer huge names, because last year they had Jim Lee kind of create long lines for the Sunday day of the show. One thing I noticed at this show is that artists continue to charge, and even writers continue to charge $5 for their signatures, and you know, per book. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a little show. They're not going to be, the huge lines aren't going to be there. The $5 is supposed to, encourage people to cut down on how much they're getting signed, so that they can get the lines moving and make some money, obviously. But for whatever reason, they were still charging the $5 per signature. So with that being the case, prints were often the best value because you were buying the print and they would be signing it. Unfortunately, this year, it seemed like the panels were kind of sparse. I looked at the panel schedule and I didn't really see a panel I wanted to attend on Saturday, and I wasn't attending on Sunday. So I was kind of disappointed in the schedule of panels that they had. And the panels that I did see when I passed through the panel section of the convention center were not very well attended. But I did see people in the live draw, and the drawings that the artists did for the live draws looked pretty good. I wasn't able to attend the auction, however. The lines for many of the artists move very quickly. Adam Kubert was one of the headline guests, and he was only there on Saturday, so he had a pretty good line. The highlight of the show for me, though, as an old school kid of the 80s, was seeing Mike Zeck, a famous cover artist and interior artist for Marvel. He's most known for Marvel Superheroes Secret Wars, Captain America, The Punisher, the first Punisher Limited series, and a famous Spider-Man story called Kraven's Last Hunt. Now, I'm going to show you guys some of the awesome stuff. Awesome, awesome stuff. As you hear some people honking their horns out here in New York City. Some of the awesome stuff that I pulled at this show for my exec to sign. So, without further ado, I had some Captain America covers. This cover. This awesome, awesome cover by Mike Zeck. The cover for Secret Wars number 8, the first appearance of the symbiote costume, holding that up. The cover for Secret Wars number 1, Secret Wars number 10 with Dr. Doom. And let me tell you, this print apparently sold out at his last appearance. He hasn't had a chance to print more, but I would have loved to pick this up as a print.
Yeah, no, that was always a great cover.
So I picked up, I had him sign the Punisher number 1 of the limited series. I had him also sign a couple of Captain America issues, but I'm kind of hurrying through this now because I want to get to the prints I picked up, because the prints were absolutely awesome. Very quickly, Captain America Annual, Cap versus Wolverine print, signed. This is like an icon. He's got so many iconic images. This great Punisher print. Black and white. I think this is a cover to a trade paperback. Obviously, a print of Secret Wars number 1. Signed.
Surprised Marvel doesn't get him to do like cover work nowadays.
He may not be interested in doing it, to be honest. This, the black and white of the Cap shooting an Uzi cover.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is so awesome. I got him to sign the actual cover, you know, the actual comic, but, you know, he was selling prints of this. Are you kidding me? It was throw money at Mike Zeck Day. Let me tell you, these prints are not cheap, but, you know, like, obviously you get a discount the more you buy. And when you see how many I bought, woo-wee. Forget about it, son, because we have just hit the tip of the iceberg. So I basically, like, went across the display. Like, he had a table of prints on display, and I just went through and picked up some classics. Like, look at this G.I. Joe yearbook cover.
Oh, man.
Yes, he did this when he signed this one. This is awesome. There's a print. my home office, like the background behind me, is going to be redecorated. And the wall in front of me, in front of the computer, is going to be completely redecorated with, like, all Zeck.
I know that you've gone through, like, 5 already. So.
Oh, you kidding? There's more. Look. Yeah. Cover.
Yes.
I've seen yes. Kraven Last Hunt, man. Look at all these prints. Yes. This is so awesome. So I got this one. I'm going to start putting them down. This
man,
one,
the framing company is going to love you.
No, you know what it is? I'm swapping out some of the older ones, right? Like, I'll take them out and put them into storage. Check this out. This is a print. This is crazy. Yeah. Here's the first issue of Kraven's Last Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Here is the iconic one where he's coming out of the grave. You know this one.
First one everyone knows.
Yep.
Was he the interior artist on those as well?
Yes.
Okay.
I had the first print of the hardcover trade. I got him to sign, but I already put that on the shelf. I'm not going to go grab that now. Some G.I. Joe stuff that he's famous for. This is an iconic cover.
Hang on for a second.
Stalker, yes.
Pull it down a little bit so people can see the price.
Yeah, I noticed that on one of them, I felt like it said like 10 cents.
No, 75 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one says 75. Like one of the first ones. Unless I read it
maybe wrong. $1. It was $1 probably.
Okay.
So yes, kids, comics used to be way less than what they are now.
Oh yeah, 75 cents, 60 cents. Here's the last issue of the Kraven's Last Hunt. Hold on. I've got some good ones here. Ooh, I don't know if this has ever been a cover, but this caught my eye so fast. Kids, you gotta tune into the YouTube because this is going to be one of the first things that goes up. And nice. that is the incredible product that's the product of Throw Money at Mike Zec Day. That was me, my first day at New Jersey Comic Expo. That was a blast. I'd already met a lot of the other guests. It was really a highlight for me to meet Mike Zec because I had not yet met him. And now all of a sudden I find out that he doesn't like doing, doesn't want to do big shows anymore. He kind of, it's not his speed. So he's going to NextB in the area. He's based in Atlanta right now, actually. He's down by you guys. But he's next going to be in the Northeast in the springtime for East Coast Comic Con in like northern New Jersey. So I may very well attend that. I know at Matt Wang 97, shout out to at Matt Wang 97, mentioned this, that Zec's going to be there. And I'm probably going to make my way there and continue to throw money at Mike Zec.
And that's in the spring?
Yeah, in the spring.
Yeah, looking into getting press passes is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, absolutely. Even if I don't, I'll still try to attend just because the guest list for that show looks pretty good. You know, and
his line long.
What's that? His line? What ended up happening was that the line for him wasn't very long until I was standing there for like minutes. People would come by with stacks of old stuff for him to sign, and he was charging per signature, right? So that's obviously a deterrent, but then, you know, the stack of prints, the table display of prints is so enticing that, you know, if you're someone like me who's just like willing to kind of redecorate or reshift things on a regular basis, then I'm willing to buy everything. But some people will just buy like two or three because that's where the discount lies. It's like two for 30, four for, or three for whatever, something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
I just hung my prints in the office last weekend, I think.
Yeah, right. So what I intend to do, and I've mentioned this before, and I've done it already, is that with the prints, with the frames that I have now, I'm just going to go through and make sure that, you know, whichever ones fit these prints I picked up now, I'll just swap them out. You know, I'll put them back into a portfolio. And just put it in there, or just put it into one of these big plastic sleeves, and just leave that in storage until I feel like hanging it again.
Not a bad idea.
Sounds like a plan.
Exactly. That way we don't have to spend for every freaking, you know, frame. You know? So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. The show was a lot of fun otherwise. There seemed to be a good attendance for Saturday. I did notice again, and I think this is, I wanted to ask you guys this actually. I don't know how big Heroes Con really is. I've heard that Heroes Con is kind of described as like a smaller con. You know, it's kind of hard to describe it or compare it to, like, New York, because New York is just insanity.
I mean, comparatively, it is a smaller, it's a way smaller than, say, New York or San Diego, but it still draws a pretty good crowd.
Yeah. So that being said, I wanted to ask, did you guys notice that, or even at some of the smaller cons that you've been to, did you guys notice that the crowd started to die down at around 5 when parents were taking their kids home?
Yeah.
Usually I'm leaving around that time anyway.
So, I mean, so with Heroes Con specifically, like usually that's the case. And like it kind of ramps up because like Friday's an all right crowd, but you know, just the people that can kind of get out. But then Saturday is the big blowout day because, you know, people are off and whatnot. And then, you know, later that afternoon, about 5 or 5-ish, so people start kind of going out and,
yeah. Yeah, maybe heading out to dinner or whatnot. I mean,
or whatever, or kind of get out of traffic before it gets real bad or something, you know.
Exactly. I understand. It's just that it's kind of disappointing because at New York, obviously, it does start to whittle its way down when people need to get out to go to dinner, or like you said, start the long trip home, whatnot, on a Friday or a Saturday. Let's say Thursday night and Friday night. Saturday night's always insane until the end. Right, but even on a Thursday or Friday night, where like I will come after work to just kind of scout out the floor, there's still plenty of people, you know, in and about, you know, out and about in the con. So, it's kind of weird to see the crowd like diminish like that to that extent. But anyway, other than that, I feel like Jersey Comic Expo is making strides. I thank them again for providing us press passes. And I'm hoping that, you know, that they continue their good work and continue to get, you know, good guests, even guests that maybe are, you know, not fans of, like, the bigger shows, but are still, you know, real name guests like Mike Zec.
I know, like, I would say this, a lot of creators kind of like Heroes Con because it's a little more, it seems a little more personal or something like that. You know, it's a little more intimate because, like I said, you know, there's a lot I mean, granted, like I said, some of the Jokers still draw some big crowds and whatnot, but nevertheless, like, it's a little bit, it's not as big as, you know, the big two or three. And I just found out, by the way, of another con, I think it's called NovaCon, that my brother told me about. If shout out to him and either any of my cousins who are watching, if they happen to do that, heaven forbid. But and it's like probably about a month after Heroes, and they're just starting. I think they'll just be starting up this year, and somewhere up in like Virginia or something like that. So that I'm gonna be looking into trying to head up that way if possible.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. So now we'll transition over to the November 24th comic books that we missed from last week. So what we'll do is we'll each go around and set like three or four comics to talk about a piece.
Sure.
Some might overlap with others, so we'll see how it goes. It'll be Civil War II, number 7.
Yep. Yeah, did Roddy just read my note?
Miles heads to Capitol Hill, I guess.
Yeah. Like my note on this is, let's get this over with already.
Yeah. That was actually my thought. I didn't see your note, but that was just my thought.
We're close.
Yeah, we're getting there. Oh my goodness, it's taking forever.
So Miles has gone to the steps of, it is Capitol Hill, right?
I'm checking now. That's what I remember being.
Yeah, and he figures he's gonna go and prove Ulysses' vision wrong, and he'll go, and if he'll just stand there until, I guess he feels he stood there long enough. I'm not sure if he really had a plan. But then Cap goes there also to prove that the premonition won't come true. There's a lot of talking. Carol shows up. They talk some more. She talks about how she wants Miles to turn himself in because she's trying to protect him. It's one of those turn yourself in for your own good.
Yeah.
And then Tony Stark arrives in some Hulkbuster armor. Carol Hadouken punches, Street Fighter punches him in the chest and like nice. Blows his back out from the looks of it.
Yeah.
Okay, blows the back out kind of has a different meaning in certain things.
Oh! Oh. Goodness.
So,
isn't it ironic that the Hulkbuster armor looks very much like a War Machine?
Yes.
Right? And I think that is intentional. I wanted to mention one thing that that Tim conveniently skipped over, and I'm going to ring the spoiler bell. Because what we find is that there is a mutation or permutation or alteration or just the evolution of Ulysses' power revealed in this issue. And what we find is that he has kind of made his way, teleported himself maybe, into the world of the actual world of Old Man Logan. Which is weird because I thought this was all smooshed together in Secret Wars. But
well, the question is, did he just go to the Old Man Logan future, did he actually just go into the future of the Marvel Universe?
Right.
And Old Man Logan is
just going to Battle World.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Well, Battle World doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it does.
So like I said, in Contest of Champions.
Yeah, I mean, if that's still
the way they've set it up and it's kind of tried to explain it, or at least the theories I've read online is, you know, it's a possible future.
Right.
Like, Old Man Logan looks like it might be the actual future of the Marvel Universe. But of course, that can change at a writer's whim.
Except for if he's in the present, then he won't be there.
Yeah.
Isn't he in the... He's in the present, so... Something
changed. Yeah, time travel, Roddy.
I know. Yeah.
I know. Time travel. So that's that. That is Civil War II, number 7. We have one left, right?
Yes.
Thank God.
Yeah, this was supposed to be the last one.
Oh yeah, Ulysses is talking to Old Man Logan, and Logan's talking about how they say Tony Stark or Captain Marvel ruined everything, and all the Inhumans are off planet now.
Hold on,
I think he referenced that.
Okay, yeah, because we knew they were supposed to be, or they are going to be.
Well, yeah, we know in like the spring that they're going to head off. At least the royal family is going to head into space,
right?
After Resurrection, but so this is looks like it's kind of teasing that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Old Man Logan said that either Carol or Tony is like all their fault.
Tony Stark happened.
Yeah, Tony Stark happened. Okay.
That's it.
Okay. I guess.
We'll see.
Instead of Hickman mumbo jumbo, we have Bendis.
Oh.
Bendis blah, blah, blah. This is what I'm calling it now. Which is poetic since that's all his books are. Is
Hickman Mumbo Jumbo and Bendis blah, 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 blah. Oh, my God, yo. That's going to be a hashtag.
We did get a final issue this week or last week in the miniseries Death of Vets, number 4. This was pretty good.
I liked it, and then I saw, and then, spoiler alert, I liked it, but the annoying twist ending kind of made that final battle not mean much.
I liked it.
You liked that ending?
I liked that it came out so quickly. It was like a week, like every, was it bi-weekly it seemed?
Right.
It was being published. So we have the big showdown between the X-Men and, at least the X-Men that want to destroy the Terrigen Clouds and Inhumans. And the X-Men are actually able to destroy one of the two Terrigen Clouds.
Right.
Using a mutant called Alchemy, but he himself ends up infected from the cloud and dies. So Cyclops tries to make this big, bold statement, I guess, to Black Bolt and gets obliterated because of it.
Actually obliterated?
You didn't read it.
No.
That's what I was referencing, the twist ending.
Yeah, so he's sitting there giving this big speech to Medusa and Black Bolt and, you know, like, mutants will never die or whatever he was talking about. And I forget what word Black Bolt actually spoke something, and we get this big, either one page or two page, I forget, spread of Cyclops getting obliterated by Black Bolt. Boo-hoo. So the X-Men and Inhumans decide to call a truce because X-Men have lost somebody. The Inhumans lost a cloud. And Beast is going to go work with the Inhumans to try to find a way to stop the Terrigen Mist from affecting mutants. And then we find out it was all a ruse by Emma Frost.
Yeah.
So back in issue 1, when the X-Men went to Muir Island and discovered how the mutants and Demi Madrox had been infected with the M-Pots and died, we did see Cyclops was infected with it as well there, and come to find out he actually died right then.
So apparently, wait.
Yeah.
Wait, so he died. Okay, now I'm gonna have to go back and read this mess.
Yeah, he died early. He died like the minute you see him like laid out on the floor at the end of like the first issue.
Sure. So he, and I guess this wraps up the 8 month stuff then for that.
Yeah, this was back in the 8 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So before he dies, like he's like telling Emma, you know, mutants can't end this way. We have to stop them or whatever. So she's carrying on the fight for Cyclops. And the Cyclops we've seen in issues, I guess, 2 through 4, was a psychic projection that she created the entire time, which I'm not sure how she was able to do that.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Yeah.
I was like, so what was actual physical?
Yeah, how you, like, I guess technically it's in everyone's minds, the Cyclops they're seeing isn't actually there. It's just in their mind, they think they see Cyclops.
Right. Did they, like, battle anybody?
Yeah.
Well, he got obliterated by a flat bolt, so.
Right.
I guess physically, he never. Yeah, I guess he touched the alchemy, I think.
Actually, I'm looking at it now, he doesn't.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's isn't that
good.
Funny?
Yeah, good visual cues.
It's, yeah, there. It's consistent.
Yeah.
Huh. Weird.
And that it leads into the Inhumans versus X-Men number 0 from this week.
This week. It does lead directly in.
I guess I can. Should I just go ahead and talk about that one?
Might as well.
All right.
Okay. So I did read that this week.
Same.
It starts from like 8 months in the past and keeps, the story moves from
forward
8 months.
From the end, right?
Yeah, from forward to 8 months to like 4 months, 6 months, 4 months, 2 weeks to yesterday.
Right. From so the it starts end of like, Death of X.
Yeah. So it starts with, it basically starts at the end of Death of X. Beast is working with the Inhumans. Emma Frost is trying to like train herself by jumping off cliffs and changing to diamond form at the last minute before she impacts the ground so she can like sort of train herself to quickly turn to diamond form if she needs to.
Which we all thought she knew how to do, but you know.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, after all these years, that's an issue?
She's kind of refining it so that it could be like instantaneous, I guess, maybe?
Oh, I get it. Diamond, refining. I see what you did there.
But in any event, I wanted to mention before Tim goes on that this is where Ultimates lost its artist, Kenneth Rocafort, was working on this.
Yes, and the art is great in this, by the way.
Oh, it's very pretty.
Yeah, very pretty.
Oh, it's very pretty.
What else happened in this issue? Emma goes to recruit Magneto for assistance. And then she also has a meeting with like a woman that we couldn't see because they were off panel, who I haven't figured out who that person is supposed to be yet.
But the meeting occurred, the hint is, at the Hellfire Club. Yep.
So, someone there. Beast is having no luck trying to find a cure, but he's all optimistic because it's science. It doesn't involve having to go punch somebody. It's, you know, using your intellect to try to come up with a scientific resolution.
Science.
Which is still kind of funny to me, because knowing the Beast from back in the day, who was always bouncing around pretty much ready to punch something.
Well, this is also the same Beast who, like, brought the original X-Men from the past to the present and, like, broke time and, like, was it X-Men 400, Uncanny X-Men 400, back before Secret Wars started. Bendis' last X-Men book, they, like, had an intervention, like, all the X-Men had an intervention with him.
Yeah.
How he's been screwing stuff up.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then, that now.
So Beast overhears Medusa, like, telling all the, you know, her inhuman people. When I say inhuman people, I mean, like, her sister Crystal and Black Bolt and some other people, like, you know, Beast's doing the best he can, but we need to be prepared if he can't find a solution, because that's, you know, there are going to be some mutants that are going to come and try to, you know, take us on, and we need to be ready. So basically a lot of setup for IVX number one in 2 weeks, I think, or next week. Comes out soon.
Not sure.
So,
all right. Fine.
Any books y'all want to recommend from last week?
Let's see.
I was looking through Age of 70s and I totally forgot to read Spider-Gwen. I'm mad about that.
I'm like so behind on that. I may just start whenever the Miles and Spider-Gwen romance starts.
Which I still don't get, but I guess we'll talk about that when we get there.
You guys didn't read Mighty Thor number 13?
I did. It was cool.
Wasn't this like a good issue? It was a nice, even though I know you're a big Dowderman fan, was it nice to see like solid art from Steve Epting? Shout out to Steve Epting. He really needs to get back on a regular Marvel book. I know he's been doing a lot of creator-owned stuff.
Yes.
He's actually going to be the Batwoman artist, I believe.
Oh, boo! Get away from DC.
No.
Hey, look, the man can draw a redhead, all right?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, in any event, Mighty Thor number 13 is a lot of fun because it's the reunion and the expansion of the League of Realms. And the title of the book is The League of Realms Rides Again. And it's an attempt to rescue the Elf Queen of Alfheim, and the League of Realms has reformed and they've gained new members, and you know, they try, in addition to the old members, they a notable addition is Angela, of former Spawn fame and Guardians of the Galaxy fame. But basically, they're on a rescue mission to try to rescue the queen, and things go south very quickly. And at the end of the issue, spoiler alert, we have a brand new version, much like this Thor has been altered gender-wise, a new version of Curse, who was originally an elf that was burned by, that was burned, and Malekith gave Algrim, he was an elf, super strength. And I believe the Beyonder had something to do with giving him, saving his life and giving him power too. But in this case, there's a new curse. It appears to be a female curse. And we go from there. That was the cliffhanger ending. This was a lot of fun because it moved the story along very quickly. And as always, Aaron seems to be telling a grand tale, and it's very, it definitely feels connected, you know, from issue to issue, and there are small storylines that are being woven back in and out. So it's it definitely feels like you're involved in a long form epic tale.
Cool. I had already forgotten about the new, what did you say, Curse?
Yes.
Yeah. I forgot that happened.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's a one page thing right at the end. But it means, you know, like I remember when that was created under the Simonson run, that was you know, that was some awesome stuff. But yeah, like everybody's female now. Curse, Thor.
What else we got?
Nice. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 13.
Yes, I read this.
Excuse me. All right, so now after we get the revelation of Lunella being the smartest person ever, she almost seems like she's getting a big head about it, but she's actually kind of trying to take it in and contemplating on what that means. Amadeus Cho is still there trying to, as they just said, be the voice of reason, which you was writing in your notes was like, yeah, that is kind of a weird thing to see given his normal demeanor.
Yeah.
But there was that, and then they get into a fight with Mole Man of all people, which is, now that I think about it, is
it's apropos. Interesting.
Yeah, considering who shows up later on in the book.
Yes.
But that happens, and you know, Amadeus and Devil Dinosaur are doing their thing, and Lunella's over there. Even, you know, after she's taking care of Mole Man directly, she's just spending this whole issue trying to, you know, contemplate her place and what
she's that processing. Means. Right. You know what's mm-hmm. funny is that at certain points she does get a big head. At certain yeah. points she's starting to. Yeah. Oh yeah, and then she's starting to process what it means to be a super smart superhero, because. Mm-hmm. Eventually, you kind of do have to resort to fisticuffs, and that's something that Amadeus is like, you know what, you're going to learn this. You know,
exactly.
You're going to learn this at some point. Even if you're a super smart superhero, you know, you're going to end up resorting to this, and there's going to be property destruction. You know, mm-hmm.
She also kind of sounded on that part. She almost kind of sounded like Kamala a little bit, because she was like, yeah. "Well, we need to do better," and this and another. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds familiar.
It's like she was watching Batman versus Superman. Oh. But which is on HBO right now. So.
Yes, it is. The tweets have been out there. So I think it's the theatrical. I don't think it's the
extended.
Extended. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
So just very quickly, Roddy alluded to it earlier. There is a character that appears at the end of this issue. I'm going to spoil it.
Actually, before you get to that, because there was another part that was kind of interesting and weird. Because she tries to. I guess, connect with her powers, try to get some control over her powers over switching minds with a Devil Dinosaur. But what ends up happening is she seems to have... I'm not sure what's going on there. Yeah, it's either a premonition
or a fantasy
or something. Or, that's what I was thinking. Because, like, she kind of zones out, like she's like things were going to happen. And then all of a sudden, we see a more grown-up her, seemingly in the future, because we see an older Devil Dinosaur. But we also see...
A whole bunch of people that aren't around right now in the Marvel.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Half of the people out. Well, yeah, I would say half of them aren't around anymore, and then the other half are. But basically, mostly the smartest people in the universe, classically, mm-hmm. let's say, including a couple of them that are still around. Which, like I said, that part was kind of weird. I was like, well, wait a minute. Including one big bald headed person who is definitely not around
exactly
anymore. So I'm like, I'm not sure where she's drawing that from. Mm-hmm. But then that's when we get into. Where Agent 70 is going with
a certain ever loving blue eyed nephew of sweet Aunt Petunia, Benjamin Jacob Grimm, mm-hmm. aka the Thing.
Which is convenient because, you know, Lunella has always been, or at least in the beginning, has been seen around Yancey Street anyway. And mm-hmm. when he comes across her, you know, this, she's sitting on apparently his favorite park bench. right on Yancey Street.
Right.
So he just kind of come in and was like, look, kid, we got to talk.
Right. What's funny is that, I'm reminded by this because it struck me it struck me that this was such a logical progression in the story mm-hmm. that Amy Reeder and Brandon Montclair, shout out to the co-writers of this book, that they would use Ben Grimm as a sounding board for her. Because he has that much experience dealing with the super smart, both the side on both on the evil side and on the side of good.
Yeah.
And, you know, who better than Ben Grimm to really be able to kind of break down the pros and the cons and both sides of the issue,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the pitfalls and the benefits of being super duper smart.
So this ought to be an interesting and convenient since he's still on Earth, you know,
exactly.
The events of Civil War. So
exactly. So, we've already covered a bunch of the books that I read. Roddy, I presume that you read Ultimates 2, number 1?
I did.
How about you, Tim? Nay?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good. All right. So I like the notes that Roddy left because I feel like we went from the conclusion of Ultimates, the first volume, to this one, and it's like, all right, we smoothed over all the things that caused us to break up right away. I mean, sort of, they didn't really, but they sort of did. You know, all the sub stories and the rifts between the various characters are all kind of solved in this issue.
Well, a couple of which that still.
Yeah, they're still fermenting. They're still under the surface, not far from the surface.
Yeah,
but
because we got a new tag phrase. You know, when Hickman was doing New Avengers, the Illuminati New Avengers, we got everything is dying. Wait, what was it?
Oh,
I forgot what it was. It was like everything is dying or something, or nothing lives or something like that. I can't remember what it was. Now we got everything is screaming, which is a thing that looks like they're going with. But yeah, okay, so let's go back to the art for a second, because you mentioned Kenneth Workford not being on Ultimates anymore. It's missed in this issue. I'm not saying that the art in this is bad.
No, Trevor Foreman does a good job. I like it.
Yeah, totally. But it's just like, it's weird, because I'm like just used to seeing Rockefeller's art with the Ultimates, and I'm just like, oh, I kind of miss it just for that, you know. But yeah, the art in this holds up for the most part, so...
I think my notes remind me that I think the hardest part of this issue is that you kind of have to know what happened in the first volume to pick this up. Yes.
And which is a theme through a lot of the books, though, because I mean, all the cards just renumbered.
Yeah, it's kind of disappointing in that regard, that this is the first issue of a new book, and it basically says at the end, hey, if you want to see how we got to this point, get this entire trade paperback.
Yeah,
basically. Read the entire first volume.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
Which is worth reading anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're the choir. You know, when you're preaching to the choir, it's like, all right, well, we read that. We even have all of our physical copies and our review copies still. But if we're talking, you know, if we're trying to convert, it's dealing with the people who may or may not want to go back and dig that out. I mean, yeah, it's a little easier now you can get it digitally. But I still think that something like this with the renumbering and the new volume, it makes it very difficult to understand how you start from the point where we start. Because if you read this coming in cold, the first thing you're going to ask is, "What the hell is wrong with Galactus?"
Yeah, the recap page is probably not going to. It'll get you halfway there, but it ain't going to take you whole way.
Exactly. So. But otherwise, you know, like I said, we're the converted. We're the choir, so we already understand what's going on. So it's a nice little, you know, getting the band back together.
Mm-hmm. Which was getting into that, which is a weird thing, because after the events of, you know, what's going on in the Civil War and, you know, causing them to break up, it is still kind of, which I'm guessing next issue is going to explain this. So let's go through what actually happens in the book. You see at one point Carol's hiding out, you know, low key. You got to assume it's after Civil War, which I think that is alluded to in here.
Yeah. Which again, they had to like tiptoe around what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they kind of gloss over what happens with that, but they do bring up what happened between, you know, her and T'Challa and him, quote unquote, betraying her, and you know what the government's intervention in killing the Ultimates ran. But apparently, T'Challa meets her in this way out of the way diner as one of his old alter egos, which is funny because we hadn't seen Luke Charles in I don't know how long.
I totally forgot that was like an alter ego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like one from early on. I'm like, oh, jeez.
Was he covering for? That wasn't the identity used for Daredevil, was it?
I don't think so. I don't remember. I might have been before that. I know. Well, it was before that. It was totally before that. But I don't know if he used it during that time.
Okay.
But yeah, like I said, I think that's a way early pull. But which was kind of funny because it was like he was kind of, you know, at one point they were talking and he was kind of going out of character. And it was like, all right. Yeah, you do that way too. We get it. You can blend in plain sight. Because basically one of the issues was the Ultimates are not supposed to be together as a group anymore. Thanks to the, you know, what the government said. So,
and thanks to what happens in Ultimates number 12 and Civil War number 8, which we still haven't seen.
Exactly. So it's like, well, there's all of that, and then so they're talking. Meanwhile, Blue Marvel and Monica Rambeau are talking. He's doing some experiment, which I think that might have been actually first, but anyway, and trying to expand his consciousness and also. I guess what
it's called mushrooms, Blue Marvel.
Kinda, right? The way he said it, he was basically trying to kind of get a sense of tune more like Monica's is now, because apparently she's more of a cosmic being now than she's ever been, because, you know, she's. I guess
I think it's an interpretation. Yeah,
it's an interpretation kind of low-key, for power. Kind of having her up. Yeah. So, and he's been trying to tune it that way. And they talk about, you know, what we see in the beginning of the book with Eternity and chains, and then they get attacked by Anti-Man, who has now, you know, I think that was also Ultimates 12.
Yeah.
Is now a herald of Galactus the Life Ringer.
Right.
Which he doesn't say that at first. So, he takes them, then goes after Carol and T'Challa, who's still at this restaurant. And then they all get taken away to see Galactus, who apparently we find out is the one, or at least we think at first, is the one who puts the band back together again. But what we actually find out at the beginning of the book, which this is a kind of a strange part, is mm-hmm. that one, America Chavez, who's
an alternate cover.
Yes. who's a variant cover that I'm that I have up right now for the video viewers, is the one to bring everybody back together. So, which is the weird part, because like I said, she was pretty, you know, her and Carol had some words and fists.
Yes.
At the last part of the book. So
that they did. And that's why it was kind of interesting that they were able to kind of mend, or at least appear to, you know, reassemble after that kind of breakup.
Right. But again, I suppose that's where we're going to, because that's where the book ends. So we're probably going to get the explanation wise. And granted, this is something probably more extra intra-dimensional. So therefore,
right.
That's why this is happening, which is kind of also funny, because it's like, wait, so America Chavez could just say, yo, Galactus, get everybody back together again.
Well, we'll see what Al Ewing has in store for this character now.
Yeah. Which, and we also know she's getting her own book, so there are plans for her. And I guess it seems like she's going to be the leader of the Ultimates this time around, judging by the last panel.
A lot of the women leadership taking place in mm-hmm. team books lately, which we'll get to later in the news.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed.
All right, what else we got?
Well, I got a couple more.
That covers me for last week.
Well, all right, cool. So let's get the Star Wars stuff out of the way, which if you are looking at this video again, I got this Star Wars coloring book. It's kind of cool. But enough about that later. We will go to Han Solo number 5, which ended last week. Short story is the race still going on, but there was some Imperial intervention, which seems to be handily taken out by a space jellyfish.
Wait, what book is this?
Han Solo.
Han Solo number 5.
Han Solo number 5.
Yeah. Thanks to some space jellyfish that just whole happened to, you know, phase in to
as
help.
They are wont to do.
Yeah, apparently these were some out of phase, you know, temporarily out of phase jellyfish that were called by this alien named Lou Ray Ano, who's been a factor in this book and in this issue in general. So they get away from the Imperials from there. Then they go to finish the race, but the Imperials are still, you know, kind of back there. And, you know, Han is kind of having this moment about, well, okay, I want to finish this race, but I need to get this mission done, which is basically some informants that were supposed to be collected from the planets that were along the route of the race. But there's also somebody who was trying to kill these informants. And what ends up happening is somebody else dies at the end of the last book, and they try to trying to figure out who did it. So that everybody else, and they figured out who that was and why that was happening, and that gets taken care of. And then the race goes towards the end, the finishing line, but it doesn't seem. It seems like Han is going to win, but then he has a change of heart because the other alien that I just mentioned a little while ago, you know. Is the last of her kind, and is, you know, this will be her last race one way or the other. So with some Imperial TIE fighters following behind them, Han decides to be a hero, turn around and take care of that while this alien finishes the race. But, you know, then things seem kind of bad, and the alien comes back through the whatever the race finish line with her own people who were thought to be dead, but now they were not. They were like temporarily out of place or something like that. And then allows everybody else to escape, but we never see this alien again. And that pretty much ends it because, you know, they find out who the killer was and who I was, and all of the informants are spake safely with the rebels. And there was a nice little touching moment between Han and Leia and some inner dialogue with Han at the end of this book. which caps it out. So outside of that, it was a decent story, I would say. You know,
I was gonna ask. I think I read the first issue of it, but I haven't read anything since. You think it's worth reading the entire series? I find myself now with the Star Wars stuff. Like I still haven't finished Darth Vader yet, though. Mm-hmm. I need to.
I mean,
Star Wars, I'm up to date with. That's the only one.
So I have to think about it, because there have been a number of miniseries, and I don't know where this one at this point rates within the other ones. But I thought it was a decent story, and it kind of fit. You know, if you like Han and curious about some dialogue with him, especially dealing with the rebels and his thought patterns on, you know, who he is, being a smuggler, and, you know, trying to do what's right versus, you know, being whoever he is type of situation, you'll probably enjoy it. You know, if you like Marjorie Liu, sure. Yeah.
I like Mark Brooks, so that's like one thing I had going for it.
And also that. So, but like I said, it was a decent story. It's not like the greatest story ever told, but, you know, it was a good Han Solo story. I will say that.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So are you going to do the other Star Wars?
Yeah.
Okay.
Star Wars 25.
Yeah. Read that also.
Okay, cool. So yeah, the Harpers are still being attacked by Krill and his crew. Darth Vader flies in, you know, with a bunch of other TIE fighters as they get closer to the planet that the rebels are trying to get to get supplies to them, apparently. And all kind of stuff, you know, going around across the street. Everybody's fighting somebody. So Luke's fighting Krill. Sansa's fighting this other stormtrooper in Krill's crew. The droids are trying to keep the ship going. Han and Leia are battling the rest of the crew in the bridge. You know, all the while all this is happening. So they take care of their individual parts. Vader's still flying around, killing the rebel pilots. Luke finally gets to the point with his battle with Krill, the way he can just get back out there and he's trying to find Vader so he can try to end it, but that doesn't necessarily happen. The mission ends up ending one way or another. Vader's none too pleased because, you know, the rebels kind of got what they, you know, did what they set out to. The Krill's crew took an L, but apparently they still have plans going, and 3PO gets captured, spoiler alert, when everybody else escapes. So there's going to be that. Luke was going to square up against Vader, but I think Leia was like, okay, nope, we got to go. So, all right, they'll take care of that later, which, of course, he does. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, like I said, it was there was a little thing with... So here's the thing about this. This has happened a couple of times within the last, say, 3 or 4 issues. So trying to escape the bridge, Han and Leia, they're basically blocked in. So they have to get out by blowing the, blowing the window out, whatever they have for a window. And they're outside with just their clothes and a mask. And I'm sitting here like, they're in space. Now, maybe they're the force. There's probably a force.
Star-Lord.
Yeah. But like I said, that has happened a couple of times.
I had the same question in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
But then for him, you could explain it because he's half alien, so.
I don't think that still explains it, though. So. I mean, unless that mask has a force field in it, even then, like, okay. Now, granted, this is the scientific part of me that's doing this, so it's like, okay, this is comics and
you gotta, science.
Yeah, you got to let that roll. But I'm like, wait, they were out there long enough to where that none of that should have happened,
right?
So, and again, like I said, this happened like a couple different times in the last few issues. So I'm sitting there like, what is going on here? Hmm. But outside of that, like I said, it was a pretty good issue. Like I said, where this is going to go after this, we don't know. Because like I said, I guess this ends that arc because the end is done. There was a pretty good fight between Sana and whatever stormtrooper she was fighting. So I don't know what's going to happen to her, but I do hope to see more of her because that was pretty fun, I thought.
Cool.
But I know the next issue is going to be a Obi-Wan issue, so it'll be a minute.
All right. Anything for last week?
I got two more, but I'll just do one.
I was about to say, like Tim's got a couple, and I actually have one left. I guess we might move to like rapid fire for last week before we move to this week.
Yeah. Future Quest number 7. So Dr. Quest is still imprisoned with Jace, and apparently the Space Ghost ship got found by Dr. Zinn, so he's at that. On the other side of that, we have Well, we see like Race and everybody else go to this secret base that apparently Internation, the group that is fronting Birdman and his crew, and some other scientist that apparently knows Dr. Quest, but this is a scientist whose son is the one that has Frankenstein Jr., if you know that character. But Frankenstein Jr. had met with some issue after last issue. But he's still alive because his brain's still intact and they're still trying to rebuild his mind. But there's a bigger version of Frankenstein Jr. that they're working on, and they're still trying to find Dr. Quest and Jace and, you know, and also deal with all these, I keep calling them incursions, and I'm going to do that forever. So you have to deal with that. But that's
mumbo jumbo.
But that's not what they call them, so whatever. On the other side of this, we have, excuse me, Birdman training the new Mitor and how to use his powers. You know, they have a little, not necessarily sparring power, but a little training session before another event happens and tries to draw Ty, which is the name of the new Mitor's club, into it. But we don't see what happens to that because we flip over to see the Impossibles at the Hollywood Bowl, who apparently are near the site of another event that is happening. And at the end of this event, when it finally comes said and done, Space Ghost come popping out of it because we haven't seen him in a couple of issues, you know, and so now he is on the Earth with everybody else and his ship and all the rest of his crew, and that's where the issue ends. I'm the way they've been handling all these characters together, which granted some of them didn't seem to fit, but at the same time they're all kind of sorted in the same universe. They are actually in the same universe, but not directly in a lot of cases, but I really like how they've been bringing them all together. Oh, and there's also a bit with Dr. Zen Spider-Bots. If you are a fan of Johnny Quest old school, you know the Spider-Bots are like probably one of the first big bads, I guess, that they meet up with, or at least that, you know, one of the ones that they kind of have to deal with. And apparently those Spider-Bots are made by someone else thanks to this. And this is the same person who is also working on the gigantic Frankenstein Jr. thing.
So, cool.
Like I said, I've been enjoying how they've been putting all these together. I wish I could say I read Wacky Raceland, but I did not, and I think that ended last week, but it has nothing to do with this.
Okay. So. Alrighty. Anything else on your list?
Kingsway West number 3. He's trying to get away from his past, but the young lady that's with him, but that's helping him trying to find his wife, is not trying to let him because she needs some help. Trying to get to some red gold, which is basically this mythical, it's gold, but it's mythical in this reddish tint that's supposed to have magical properties to it that her people found. But them trying to lay claim of it is going to bring a whole bunch of people bearing down on them. But also the stash is being guarded by, they call them Wendigos. They look like big giant zombies and not the Wendigos of Canadian.
Yeah.
Myth. So the young lady whose name is Odd Toy, tried to convince Kingsway to help them out. She does it in the stupidest way possible by letting the Wendigos out, thinking, cause he was trying to walk away or actually ride away. She lets them all out. So now that leaves everybody, you know, being attacked, and Kingsway finally saying, all right, and now I got to help. So he tries to help, but there's not so much to do. And then we can see another character come swooping in to help out that was an enemy a couple of issues back, but apparently has some need of the same stuff that they have found themselves with. So there's a little battle. They kind of talk after that because they need somebody to actually, if they're going to do something with this red gold, then they need somebody to process it because they don't know how to do it. And like I said, armies from all sides, once they find out that that's there, are going to be after them, and they're only a small group of people. So at the end of this, they find a common ally with this person with wings, which is basically a black lady with wings, whom apparently got those wings from Red Gold, and her and a bunch of other people, like people, were experimenting on to get these powers. So she needs them. She needs it to keep them, which I find kind of interesting. But that's where we leave the book at this moment. So I'm not sure how there's some interesting stuff with this book. I'm not sure where exactly it's going to go because, like I said, he's supposed to be looking for his wife. Mm-hmm. Then there's this other stuff, and it's all steeped in the Old West type of thing, and magic at the same time. So all of that is kind of appealing to me.
Right. And it's Pac, so, you know.
And it's Pac,
you
don't, exactly.
You know, Greg Pak knows how to tell a good story, so it's always, mm-hmm. you know, it's intriguing to see how he's developing this creator-owned property.
Yeah, so it's still going, but it's still going, you know, and it's still interesting.
All right. Well, it seems like because he's at least got it at Dark Horse, right? Then, you know, there might be a commitment to it, at least for, you know, I don't know how many issues he's got so far, but
it's three.
Okay. No, I mean in terms of like a commitment. Oh, I don't know if it's an ongoing or if it's a limited series. So
if he's gonna go to 12 and
right.
let it go or not. Yeah.
Right.
No.
All right. Very quickly, I just wanted to – you actually mentioned this earlier, and I forgot that it was on my list. Spider-Gwen number – what number is this? 13?
Hmm.
So very quickly, this was the Thanksgiving issue, and obviously very well-timed. It's kind of offbeat. It's a book told into – you know, it's a story that's told in two parts. I believe Chris Visions does the second half of the book, while Robbie Rodriguez does the first half. The transition in art is actually fairly jarring, the transition in styles. But it doesn't take away from the story because it really is, it's pretty essential reading because it moves the current story along, despite, you know, having to take some time off to deal with the Thanksgiving holiday. If you've been reading the book, you know that, let's put it this way, spoiler alert. Gwen doesn't exactly have a lot of people to have Thanksgiving dinner with. We'll leave it at that. I don't want to spoil too much because I kind of have to go back and make sure I'm completely caught up on this too, but I know I read the issue before this one. Lastly, I also want to mention as an aside, apparently in every Marvel reality, spoiler alert, Aunt May always knows your secret identity. When you read this, you'll know what I mean.
Mm. So, and I think the last issue was the Halloween one, wasn't it?
Yes. So they're definitely keeping up with the calendar.
Right. So that one was kind of a one-off also.
Yeah, but it still moves the story along because they were they were definitely moving bits. But I think this one does more to move the story along.
Okay.
All righty. Tim, what do you got? You're on mute, Tim.
Got the last two from last week.
Go for it.
Teen Titans number 2. Damian has brought the Titans together, Teen Titans together, and he sort of tells them why. The reasoning is because he knows that this teen group that has been formed by Ra's al Ghul called the Demon's Fist, they're going through their sort of their teachings, and before they can graduate, they have to pick a target and assassinate that target. So each member of the Demon's Fist had already selected a member of the Teen Titans because they're so similar. They see them as a rival. Like the Demon's Fist is like the dark side, and the each member of the Teen Titans is like the light side.
That's so it's convenient. Like
five. Yes, it's very convenient. I was reading the article this week about how it's like, yeah, it's a little too much on the nose, but whatever. So that's the reason that he recruited everyone, because he knows everyone's targeted, and the only way for them all to survive is if they work together. And Damian was actually supposed to be a member of the Demon's Fist, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Ra's al Ghul formed a team for Damian to be their leader, but of course he left to go be with Batman, and now the team has found them and they're fighting them. It's kind of where it goes. And Vigilante Southland number 2, another DC book. It's a limited series dealing with this vigilante guy, his girlfriend. Oh, yeah.
The vigilante guy. I love it.
His girlfriend was killed. She was like this sort of civil activist type person. So now he was kind of like a slacker, liked to play basketball. But his girlfriend being killed has him investigating the reasons why. And, of course, he starts.
Fridged. Excuse me.
What'd you say?
Is it fridged?
Yeah, fridged.
Not quite, but...
Yeah, not quite. So of course he's the more he digs up, the more threats he finds. He also finds himself a mentor of sorts. This guy, this kind of I think he's in a wheelchair. Either way, he's like this disabled person, but it's like one of those things where I may be disabled, but I still know how to handle myself. And you know, he like can disarm the vigilante character from his wheelchair. But it's cool. It's, you know, it's a nice street level story. Has some good art. So I'm enjoying the miniseries so far. So that's it from last week for me.
All right. I just wanted to just interject and just mention that last week there were two Marvel Hip Hop covers. One was the Ultimates Squared or Ultimates 2 Volume 1. The shout out to Salt and Pepper right here.
I have that one. Yep.
And there was a Venom number 1. It's
I read that, by the way.
Right. I did read this. I didn't want to talk about it.
I didn't want to talk about it either.
Ringing endorsement.
Oy.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, this is it's a cool Bill Sienkiewicz drawn and painted cover, but the album is by Prodigy, and I just had it up here. The album's called Albert Einstein, and it was an album by Prodigy and somebody else. But I think it's Prodigy of Mobb Deep, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah.
It is, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So those are the two hip-hop covers from last week.
So what do we want to get to this week?
Not much to it.
Well, I'm reaching for Ghost Rider number 1. I happen to like this issue a lot. I'm a fan of the Ghost Rider character, who is making a hell of an appearance on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now, if you guys are keeping up.
There you go again.
This past week's episode was phenomenal. It was really good.
Yeah, we got to see the Rider switch hands.
Yep.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Whoa, who got it?
You want to spoil it?
You want us to spoil it for you?
Yes, I don't care.
It was only temporary, but Mac got it, yeah.
Yeah.
Mac. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Although it was temporary, but there was something about the end of the episode was like make it sound like Robbie's not gonna be there much longer, which I guess kinda makes some sense. I don't know, because
well, you know, at some point they want to develop the rest of the characters, right?
Sure. Because you got a statement saying you want to help me settle my last score, and I was thinking, I was like, wait, so are they going to like transfer the Rider back to Mac after that happens, or we don't know? Yeah,
no idea. Can we get back to Ghost Rider? I got to step away for a second.
Sure, do it. Okay.
Oh, I thought he was going to talk about Ghost Rider.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. So I guess we can go to what you got, Tim?
Well, I guess I could say this for when he comes back, but I did read Ghost Rider number 1, and I wasn't that crazy with it. It was fine. I don't know. The writing didn't grab me that much, and, you know, they're bringing in All-New Wolverine and Totally Awesome Hulk to, I'm sure, to help sales and sort of integrate him into the Marvel Universe proper more.
And probably have to call back to his dealings, well, to the writer's dealings with those characters.
Yeah. Those characters. And it helps that the editor, Mark Panicia, I'm sure I didn't pronounce that right, but he also edits those other two books.
Sure.
So, let's see. Other things from this week. The New Talent Showcase, number 1 from DC Comics. Mm-hmm. This was their sort of like oversized book where they've had these writer workshops and artist workshops where they have or talent workshops where they have people submit work and then they choose like 8 writers and 8 artists. This, I think, featured work from the writers that were chosen from the last group. They like brought to DC Burbank, the DC offices, and they're like tutored under Scott Snyder and Jim Lee, Klaus Johnson, as far as like art and writing goes.
Yeah, I remember there was some rabble going around that when he announced those people.
I don't remember why. I'm sure there was a reason.
Yeah, I don't either, but I do remember there was. So.
I think some people like considered it like some of them were named people. Like, I mean, they've made a name for themselves in the indie world,
right?
But as far as like working at DC or Marvel, they hadn't really done it that yet. So it's like,
yeah.
But there was a lot of good stories in here. I like the Cary Randolph did the art for a Wonder Woman story, and I would try to pronounce these people's names, but I don't want to butcher them. Actually, let me open the comic.
Give it a shot.
Give me 1 second. But I like that one. There was people seemed to like this one Heart Girl story. There was like a hot cave and everything. The artist that's doing the Dr. Fate book, Sunny Liu, did the art for that. The writer for that actually was pretty. It's a known woman that I can't think of right now. I just got the issue open here. You read off the list of names. It's just loading here. And see, that's another thing. They like give you, and on the titles page, they just give you the last names of the artists and writers.
Right.
But let's see. So there was a Hellblazer story by Smith and Ohm. Wonder Woman Blood and Gory was the Corey Randolph, Art Ayala was the writer. There was a White Lantern, Kyle Rayner story with Michael, I think it's Michael Morrissey, but that's the name people I think I've seen before.
Okay.
The artist from Omega Men did the art, Baginda. Heart Girl was by, oh yeah, Erica Schultz. I think she's like a novelist, or she's done a couple comics here and there.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
Yeah, and Sonny Liu was the artist. There was a Dead Man story by Chris Sebela. That's the name. At least in the indie world, like Image World.
Yeah.
Wonder Girl by Khan. Again, I'm just giving last names because that's what they give here. You have to actually like open, get to each individual page inside the actual book to get the full names. Gotcha. There was a Catwoman, Wonder Woman story by BB. Superman, The Man in Black.
Like Heather?
BB. Superman, The Man in Black from McMillan, and a Harley Quinn from Joella Jones, who's the artist, but she did the writing for this.
Oh, okay.
She's a DC exclusive now, so she's actually writing that Supergirl. She's doing that Supergirl.
Wait, Joelle Jones is an exclusive?
Yeah, she signed DC exclusive.
Okay.
She's doing the Supergirl Before You Fly or something, some little mini miniseries. Gotcha. That's sort of like based around kind of like how it's kind of based around like her TV story, kind of, sort of.
Which, I mean, kind of the main one is too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like that. It's I think it's like $7.99, so it's kind of, you know, pricey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? That's $7.99.
The new talent showcase from DC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Comixology page, and it's got all their names on it. It's a lot of folks.
Yeah. So that's something that they say that they're gonna try to do yearly. Do a book that showcases the people that they choose for the writers and the artist workshops. So it's good that they it's good to have a program like that to actually go out and find talent. You don't hear about that from Marvel.
It's true. It's true.
That's funny.
So, Ghost Rider, you want to...
Yes, I'm sorry for stepping away. My apologies. Things, you know, things, important things have to be done, right?
Yeah.
So, just very quickly, as I was mentioning earlier, it's nice... what I wanted to actually mention in conjunction with Ghost Rider's new current appearance on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's nice that this is coming out now while the character is getting some shine, some notoriety. Does actually, you know, basically continue the story of Robbie Reyes and his brother Gabe. And what's interesting about this issue is that there is no mistake, absolutely no mistake, they are intertwining this character into the Marvel universe. You know, there are guest stars galore in this issue that kind of pop up out of nowhere. It's kind of funny. And I wanted to mention, there's one thing I didn't write down. There's something I wanted to, that kind of crossed my mind because of, the current Champions book and some of the books that Tim likes to read that are based on teen heroes. I just wanted to mention that it seems like maybe this is just a function of our age. Let's be honest, right? It's a function of our age that we're finally seeing a good crop of legacy heroes at Marvel. And it's these legacy heroes that are teen heroes, which are basically creating the Marvel version of the new Teen Titans in Champions. And now we have possible future members of the new Teen Titans being highlighted here in this issue. One is already a member of the Champions book, which is the Totally Awesome Hulk. Spoiler alert. And there's another one. Spoiler alert, you're on mute.
Rather, I was about to say, why are you gone? We mentioned who it was, who shows up.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, I talked about it because I said I was crazy about the book.
Oh, you weren't?
Eh.
You know what's funny?
The writing I wasn't too crazy about.
What's funny about that, though, is I felt like this was kind of a force feeding of Robbie Reyes into the Marvel U as a whole, because his first trip into the Marvel Universe only had Johnny Blaze. So now it's just like, hey, we're absolutely going to put him right in the thick of the superhero fray. And they also brought in, spoiler alert, you mentioned it already, X-23 or the new Wolverine. And I feel like she may be a future member of Champions as well.
I mean, yeah, when you got potential
a lot legacy of heroes, like, exactly.
Yeah, so there's always that potential, but who knows if they'll probably show up in the book, whether they're members or not, who knows, but
right.
They'll probably show up at one point or another.
I just think it's interesting that we've reached a point in the current Marvel continuity that we actually have legitimate legacy heroes who can kind of hold their own books and now form a team book.
Whether some people like it or not, yeah.
Right. So that being said, all right, so we covered Inhumans versus X. How about Ms. Marvel number 13?
How about Ms. Marvel number 13?
Okay. All right. So this book was written by G. Willow Wilson. Art by Mirka Andolfo. And I mentioned the art because we always talk about the art and how it seems like that Marvel is striving for a very consistent look to the book, and they succeed again with this artist. I don't know if this is this artist's first go around on the book, but they do maintain a fairly consistent look to the characters.
I mean, yeah, it still misses some of Alfona's kind of background touches or whatnot, but yeah, they keep it relatively consistent.
Right. And I think the coloring also does a really good job of keeping that consistency as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a certain palette of coloring to this book that they maintain. And I think that does a lot to keep the consistent look to it and the quality. So basically this issue begins with kind of like we dive right back into the personal relationships. Whereas the last issue, wasn't the last issue where she was overseas?
Yes.
Yeah. So she's back right in the middle of school and all the personal relationships that have deteriorated and been blown up literally as a result of Civil War II. So there's a kind of a cool twist where Kamala's extended family via marriage all of a sudden gets a little closer. Mm-hmm. And the reason why that extended family gets a little closer is that districts have been redrawn due to gerrymandering by the local state assembly or city or city council. So it's very relevant and in politics and government and civics today.
Yeah, and as we said before starting, this issue was a little late. Could have come. You said a couple of weeks.
No, you didn't say late. You didn't say light. You said late, right?
No, that's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It sounded like you said light. I'm like, no, it's actually very heavy. It's actually a very heavy issue because it deals with weighty topical items such as elections and being active civically. And, there's a lot of very current things here. There's a great line that Michaela drops in here about when Kamala goes on a speech after there's a bunch of people who are giving her reasons to not vote in the upcoming election. Michaela says, wow, she was really paying attention when I showed her all those West Wing clips on my phone. I started laughing real hard. I was cheering.
And you know what? That was the point. I thought, wait a minute. So do all of the people or the rest of the people, like, does she know? Last I checked, she doesn't know that Kamala's Miss Marvel.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, and there was a part of this, it was like her and the other girl that shows up, which I thought was her friend Nadia, but apparently that's the sister-in-law.
Yeah, I think it's the sister-in-law because we have the brother-in-law here.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, because usually Nadia, which is the other
no, girl, Nakia.
Nakia, excuse me. Yeah. Nadia, where did I get Nadia? Oh,
it's another real name.
Yeah. And I was thinking it was Nakia, but apparently that was not the case. And it wasn't because they both wore Habibs. So, because Nakia is usually the one who's kind of up for that kind of thing. You know, because basically they go around trying to basically rock the vote.
Which they actually say, which made me laugh too. Mm-hmm. They actually say rock the vote. just very quickly, just to sum up, the reason the villains behind this are actually, spoiler alert, some of the characters that were in this book earlier that were involved with the Hydra plot to kind of gentrify and take over Jersey City, including Dr. Faustus. And I thought that was cool that they brought the characters back for this particular story arc or storyline.
Hipster, you know, Chuck.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, there's a reason why I consistently recommend this book to pretty much anyone. It is a fun read. It's got a lot of spirit, a lot of heart, and and this issue, on top of all that, remains topical and relevant to what's going on right now. So it's really, some of this stuff, like we were saying earlier, I wish this was out 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 2 months ago, to remind people why it's important to get out and vote. So it's a great, great book. You know, it's always a consistent click of the week candidate, and it is again for me this week.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, Joelle Jones does the cover.
Ah, yes.
I like her
talking about that. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, no, I got a kick out of the West Wing reference. That really, you know, I busted in a big smile on the subway. All right, let's see. Totally Awesome Hulk. Anybody?
No.
You didn't read Totally Awesome Hulk number 12?
Not yet.
Oh, I won't spoil too much. It is the continuation of T'Challa and random Korean SHIELD agent going after Korean-American, Totally Awesome Hulk and his Korean-American sister. There's lots of Koreans in this, Greg Bako, you know. I mean, that's kind of the funny thing that I can talk about without spoiling too much of the book. So, you know, there's definitely a lot going on in this. There is some... I don't want to say resolution to it, but I want to leave it at that because, you know, there is a kind of a sad and touching ending to this. So read this. Also, good book this week.
Mm. Just realized I didn't read Captain Marvel from last week. Speaking of Marvels.
Mm. Oh, that covers my books for this week already.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, what you got, Tim?
I have, that's the top of the sheet. Two annuals from DC I can get to. Batman Annual number 1 was a sort of a compilation of stories from Steve Orlando, Tom King, Scott Snyder, and Ray Fox, I think, did a story. A couple others. They brought back Ace, the Ace Hound, back into the Batman mythos. I guess Batman used to have a dog named Ace, so they brought that dog back. And they had a nice little story of how, like, it used to be a dog that was the Joker owned, and it was like he would have it attack other dogs and people dressed as Batman, and the Pound took it because it was abandoned, and they went it, and Alfred goes to the Pound to adopt the dog, and they're like, you know, this dog is this, you know, it's a lost cause. Of course, after donating a lot of Bruce Wayne money to get the dog, they gladly give it to him. He takes it home. He's like got the whole, like, the whole upper arm body thing with, like, the, you know, attack the arm like they do the attack dogs. He's got that suit on, and the dog's like attacking him in the Bat Cave and whatnot while Batman's trying to solve cases. Even Bruce is like, you know, there's some people, you know, can't be saved or whatnot. Some things can't be saved. And eventually the dog starts learning, and Batman becomes all soft to him, and that's his Christmas present. Bruce doesn't really realize it, but that's his Christmas present.
What happened to Batcow?
Yeah, I don't know. That was another writer. Steve Orlando did a story with introducing some character that I forget the name of, but it seemed like it's going to play. Actually, I think they pretty much tell you that, you know.
Look out for this character.
Yeah, in 2017.
Hmm.
But yeah, it was nice, fun stories. There was a Batman and Harley Quinn story that I skipped. Superman was cool. Superman Annual Number 1 was fun because guest starred Swamp Thing, who I don't care about, but it dealt with a lot of stuff like how this pre New 52 Superman's presence in our Earth is affecting the Green.
There was a disturbance in the Force.
Yeah, disturbance in the Force. He's pulling too much solar radiation from the sun or whatever, and Swamp Thing helps him deal with that. But the superstar or the MVP of the book is Jorge Jimenez's art. It is great, and he's also going to be the artist on Super Sons. So when that launches, I'll be all over that book.
So I saw the thing for this book, and I thought it was like Swamp Thing versus Superman. Is it going to be the sequel to Batman v Superman?
Yeah.
But I guess it doesn't go that far.
Oh, and like I told, I tweeted about it, and I had a little quick convo with Matt Wayne 97 online. How usually I skip annuals because nothing really happens in them, and then within the last like less than 5 days, I've read 3 annuals and liked all of them. I read these two, Batman, Superman, and then I also went back and read Uncanny X-Men Annual from two weeks ago.
Yeah. Right, that was pretty good.
Because Chris Roberson, who is a assistant editor or associate editor, one of the two, at Marvel, he's been teasing this project that he's excited about that hasn't been announced yet. So I've been kind of like, you know, playfully picking his brain, like, you know, is it X-Men related because he's an assistant editor on the X-Men line of books, and he's like, no, it's not X-Men related. And then this was a couple of weeks ago, we were having a conversation, and I was like, okay, I'll leave you alone. And I saw him tweeting about the Uncanny X-Men annual and Anthony Piper's art. Actually, he's the art. He does a backup story in it. He's a actually black artist.
Okay.
Have you heard of a Trill League?
No. Everybody?
Sorry?
No.
Google Anthony Piper and art, or like Trill League. He does like a parody of the Justice League, except with black characters. But so Anthony Piper does a backup story in Uncanny X-Men Annual Number 1. He's the writer and artist on it. It's a Domino's backup story. Owen's Sunspot, basically. But art's great. And he was like, you know, he was praising Anthony Piper and whatnot. And I was like, oh, I tweeted something to him. I was like, oh, I have to go check that out. And actually, let me put the focus on Roddy for those watching the video.
Oops, I shouldn't have done that.
So wait.
Good job!
Oh, wait, there it is. Yeah, Trill League. So okay. I was like, cool, I'll have to go check that. I was like, I'll have to go check that issue out and whatnot. And I forgot how we got on the topic again about, oh, I asked him if I had missed his project that he was excited about. Because, you know, lots of news comes out, I don't see everything. And he was like, no, not yet. But he was like, Anthony Piper is attached to it. So I was like,
yeah, apparently Trill League was a Kickstarter.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, cool. I tweeted that back to him, and I was like, well, let me go Google Anthony Piper, because I don't know who this guy is. And I was like, I Googled and found all the stuff that Roddy's displaying on the screen right now, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, really?
So then I went and read the backup story, and it's great. So now I'm like, what the hell are they working on? So Chris Robinson is also a black man, so he's got a black editor and a black artist, maybe doing writing and art, perhaps, on some unannounced book that hasn't been announced yet.
Which apparently it does Anthony Piper right there.
Yeah. And if you go to his Facebook page, he actually says he works for Marvel.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, I don't know if that's him, but that's cool.
Right, yeah, check that out. Go back, go read Uncanny X-Men Annual Number 1 from 2 weeks ago.
All righty. Are we done with this week?
I got a couple.
All right. Let me just jump in with the hip hop cover. The lone hip hop cover that was out this week was the Ghost Rider one. It's a Cypress Hill cover.
That's all right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I guess I'll do one because I hadn't finished the other one. So I was about to say, speaking of annuals, Star Wars Annual Number 2, but I hadn't really finished reading it. So let's skip that. Mask Number 1.
Mask.
Exactly.
Is Brandon Ryan that? Easton. Okay.
Brandon Easton. I enjoyed this. So this kind of takes place clearly after a revolution, or at least some, you know, it kind of stems out of revolution. And so in the revolution issue, we saw the makeup of the team, you know, and the kind of inner working surrounding them, the making up of it. Here, we're just kind of jumping into the fact that, apparently, Miles Mayhem, who made the Mask crew and the team in the first place, has already switched the sides and has framed Mask for some crimes that Venom has already done. So Mask is on the run, and they're trying to find a new place to hide out, or to stage their dealings with. At the same time, apparently there was some, and I don't know. Now I haven't. Also, Revolution Number 5 came out this week. As a side note, but I have no idea what's going on with it because I haven't. I told myself I was going to go back and read all of the Revolution stuff that I have after it's all said and done. And like I said, the last issue of Revolution came out this week, so I don't know if some of this stuff is kind of coming out of that, or they're just kind of throwing you in to what's going on. Because there is some mention of Revolution and the fact that Miles Mayhem is basically trying to wipe out all the Cybertronians, which also the Revolution issue said, the Mask Revolution issue also mentions this at the same time. But anyway, so thanks. The team's on the run. They found some files from Matt's dad that has a bunch of secret bases that he had. So they're going to, you know, try to stake him out and see what's there. At the same time, Venom's setting up a trap for the team that has something to do with these great rocks called Or-13, I guess, which may or may not, which I think has something to do with that powers there are definitely to do with trying to get rid of the Transformers or whatnot. So, like I said, the team falls into a trap. A couple of people get hurt. We get some backstory on Matt Tracker, you know, in his youth. Apparently, he was a social justice warrior in his youth. There's a little play between potential play between him and one of the other members, Gloria Baker, who's like the intellect or the tech person on the team. But at the end of the issue, like I said, they fall into this trap and they're cornered by Venom, who is bearing down on them. And that's it. It was a pretty action. Like, it starts out with a bunch of action and, you know, it hits the right beats that you would kind of, I think that you would kind of want out of a mask book. Didn't see the Rhino. You did see what potentially was Boulder Hill, the base, like they were kind of escaping out of, I think, but I'm not sure if that was the case or not. But like I said, I'm curious to see where this book is going to go, because like I said, that this first issue was actually hit the ground with the action. If you're a fan of Mask, I'd say check it out. Like, you might be a little lost about the Revolution stuff, but I think as an issue on its own, and like I said, being a fan of Mask, you might enjoy it. So
cool.
All right.
For me. The only one left for me is New Avengers number 18.
How was that?
I forgot to read
it. It was
that.
Good. Great finale. Yeah.
Wait, was this the last issue?
Yeah, because US Avengers.
I was trying US Avengers. Yeah.
Yeah, so the story just moves to US Avengers. But for the people that, or the heroes that aren't a member of the US Avengers, their stories are wrapped up nicely and they're kind of sent on their way. Roddy, you may want to read it for. How Ewan wraps up Power Man.
No doubt.
Because it's kind of interesting.
Mm,
might see him somewhere else, maybe, perhaps. Maybe. Uh-oh. It's all, I mean, it's a whole lot of, like, you know, it's, a lot of stuff is left open-ended for other writers, I guess, to pick up if they choose to in the future.
But the way you make it sound, sounds like there's going to be another Ewan book.
No.
Potentially.
No. Okay. No.
I'll read it after this.
Not another Ewan book. Well, I mean, I guess it's possible, but it's not what I took from it.
Gotcha.
So he is he goes off with someone else from the team. White Tiger is now, there's two White Tigers because the original is back. They're both powerless because the Tiger entity is off, and like White Tiger from the New Avengers book doesn't want to be White Tiger anymore, but then she talks about going to hunt the White Tiger entity because she you know, knows how it works and knows that it's going to take a host somewhere and she needs to be there when it happens.
Wait, I thought she had control of
the
White Tiger because...
Well, not anymore, because the other one got revived and got the powers of both.
I know, but then they fought and I thought Ava ended up getting it back somehow, because I think they're both
powerless. I think they're both powerless now. Didn't they break their stone or something?
Something. I remember there was a fight between them and the Tiger Avatar. And something. I don't remember what happened after that. I'll have to go back and read it. But anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So they're off doing their thing. We have new mutants appear here. Had a new mutants reunion. I want to say there was another reunion tease in another book somewhere. Oh, Young Avengers with the Teddy and Billy, Wiccan and Hulkling. Roberto gets them an apartment with a great view of Central Park, I think.
Wait, you said there was a reunion? They've been there.
They tease a reunion. Reunion.
Ooh, okay.
Like maybe it's time for us to get the game back together.
Right, and I think that had been mentioned a couple of times in the past.
But as they say, right now they're just going to enjoy their view. Mm. And the balloons that were left in the apartment for him.
Mm.
But Ewan, you could tell he had fun writing this. There's a bunch of jokes with like the different AIM groups, like all the little short jumps, like when we jump from Power Man and his story wrapping up, and the White Tigers. They're all these different people are like hunting down the splinter cells of AIM. Like there's Tim.
Yeah, that was the one that came up in Mark.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry to laugh so loud. That was pretty funny.
And there's another one. I think it was Tim. They were saying like they can't decide what the T stands for. And like one guy's like, it stands for translocation. And some other guy's like, no, it's not. It's supposed to be this. And then like they're at the beginning of the issue, they're at Bobby's funeral. And Songbird's giving the eulogy. He's obviously not dead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Somber's giving the eulogy, and there's like the AIM, some AIM people are like in the crowd, like crying, and this one guy's like pouring out a drink for Bobby, and the guy behind him was like, dude, not in here.
I love Al Ewing. He writes some,
yeah.
Some
and then like Larry, and then Larry gets shot in his junk a couple pages later. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And you know what's funny, real quick? At New York Comic Con, he had like no line in front of him. He was like sitting at his table in the artist alley. There's like no one in front of him. Like, when I passed him by, it was sad. I was like, oh my God, I should have dug out some more Al Ewing stuff.
It's probably because he's British.
But now you got me thinking, though, an Al Ewing Young Avengers book. I wonder how that would go.
Well, I think it's one of those things where even if they are maybe planning something, which I don't think they would, because it kind of would run counterintuitive to like Champions.
Right. I think they want to push Champions right now.
But yeah. I think it's like one of those things where like he just set it up for if anyone wants to come and play with these characters, they can do that.
Maybe somebody is, and that's why he set it up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that too. I kind of think that with the Power Man thing. So.
Okay.
All right.
And actually, the way I just talked about it, I think that's my click of the week for this week.
Nice. Click of the week.
We can give our, I guess we can do.
Yeah, we'll do both of them all together. Yeah.
Okay. Is it that time?
Yeah. Sure. It is that time.
So, yeah. New Avengers.
For this week.
For this week for me. And last week, looking. I enjoyed Star Wars a lot. It's going to be Star Wars: The Death of X, just because of the twist. Come back to me.
All right. I'll go for last week. I'll follow up on that and say that my click of the week for last week was Mighty Thor number 13. Great story. Nice change of pace art from Steve Epting on the interiors. And for this week, I'm going to go with the easy pick, Miss Marvel number 13.
Because one of us usually will.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I never read it in time, and I'm always like reading it like weeks later, and I'm like, oh, I would like that issue. I would have picked it if I had read it. Mine from last week is going to be Star Wars 25.
Hey, Star Wars 25, okay. Oh, man. So for last week's, I think I will go, because there were a couple of good ones. I think I'll go with Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 13.
Okay.
For last week. Oh, wait. There we go. Sorry, I'm kind of plugging some stuff in as we're doing this. And for this week. Yeah, and for this week.
You know you want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the Miss Marvel was actually pretty decent, but at the same time, think about that Miss Marvel book. Yeah, I'll go with Miss Marvel because.
There you go.
Consistently great book anyway, so.
Cool.
And that's it for me.
Alrighty. So while you're filling in the sheet, I will pull up the first ad read for this week.
Wait, what was yours from last week?
Thor, Mighty Thor.
Well, Thor, thanks. And Dirts is, I think Zombie Tramp came out, so we'll get
Alrighty. So while you're doing that, our first ad read of the night is for Busted Tees. This episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and Brick and Morty, Rick and Morty as Legos. To help keep our podcasts free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for many awesome t-shirts that are on sale each week. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
So I just recognized that Injustice had an annual this week, but I didn't need that. Did not know that. So, I tell you what, Dirt's going to get Great Lakes Avengers number 2 for this week, and I think Zombie Tramp from the last week. I don't know if it came out. So, you're welcome, Dirt.
There you go. All righty.
All right. So, news from the weeks. It's all of them together.
Yeah, they're in order. They're in some order-ish.
So, Cinematic News. Heroes alum Greg Grunberg cast a recurring role on The Flash.
Which, if you saw last week's episode, you already saw him.
What's he do?
He's a detective.
He's a gruff, stalwart figure at the police department. All
right. That's right. Yeah, he did show up this week or last week.
Last week, yeah.
That would kill a Frost episode. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a report that I wrote. Green Lantern, a Green Lantern will appear in Justice League movie.
Good job, Tim.
Yeah.
Except for I did not use yours, but sorry.
Oh!
Who'd you get it from?
Newsarama.
Oh, okay. I like them too.
Not burning any bridges here, Tim.
No!
Nope. See, new Justice League cartoon will premiere this month.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that's Justice League Action that we're talking about. Debuts. Is there a date in here somewhere? 16th. December 16th. Oh, the same night that
we'll all be at Star Wars.
Yeah. But
I guess we'll be at Star Wars the 15th, though, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm a Cartoon Network app to watch it stream somehow.
I don't know what to think about this. Like, you guys have seen the trailers from it?
No, not yet.
I've watched a couple of videos.
Oh, okay. I see what they're going for, and it's kind of fun, and it's kind of the art's kind of blending some of the Tim work and some, I want to say not Teen Titans Go, but the Batman or one of them, I don't know. And they're going a little bit more jokey with it, or just a little more lighter with it, I guess.
Okay. So
it's I don't know. I find myself strangely appealed to it, at least from what I've seen from the thing. But I'm still missing Justice League, so go for it.
Yeah. I'm like kind of man to it.
And they kind of look like they're going for a lot of pulls, like a lot of deep cuts.
Okay.
So that in itself, and granted, my DC knowledge is not that great, but even some of the ones I've seen, it was like, wow, they're kind of going at it. So that ought to be interesting.
Amelia Clark is joining in the Han Solo standalone film.
So the Mother of Dragons is now going to be the lover of Han Solo, or possibly.
Possibly. Though the rumor, I guess, is Sanaa Solo. Well, they've cast in black actresses also.
Oh.
Yeah, but I think she was also in that running, and I think she was one to one out.
Okay. They're whitewashing her.
Oh, no.
Maybe.
You know what? My thought was, like, they were like, well, we got a black girl, Han, so let's just flip the love interest.
They don't have a black Han.
What are you talking about?
No. Yeah, Donald Glover.
That's Lando.
Lando, I'm sorry. Oh, goodness. All right. What am I thinking?
It's late.
It's late. We're out of practice. It's only been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, right.
Stephen Amell was beat up by a fan.
What?
Got in a fight with a fan.
That was not true.
What?
Yeah, so some fan squared up on game, a headbutt, you know, trying to fight the Green Arrow. And he, you know, didn't do anything. He just kind of rolled away from it.
That's crazy. People are stupid.
Don't be stupid, fans. Yeah, Come on.
Luke Cage hooks up with Claire Temple in latest photos from Defenders set.
At least that's what it's looking like. So,
if you but they, watch they did Luke kind of, Cage,
yeah, I was about to say, do you kind of see
this? No surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw that being reported, I was like, and?
And they went out for some coffee.
Well, I guess it's news. It's probably news because of the fact that, well, we know comic-wise, he ends up with Jessica Jones, and they kind of did have that.
Right, it's probably some misdirection, right?
Yeah, that's probably why it's big news.
The stars of Marvel's Luke Cage react to the death of musician Sharon Jones.
Yeah, speaking of, that was the really sad news. So Sharon Jones and the Daptones, whose music you heard on the last episode of Cage, prominently. Matter of fact, yeah, they showed up there also. She died shortly after the election, coincidentally, and there was some rumor that it was possibly because of the election, but I don't think that was the case. Because she'd been battling pancreatic cancer for a while, so not the case.
Oh, yeah, we missed this news. Angela Bassett boards Marvel's Black Panther.
Yes! Yay! Queen Wamanda, who we know from the current series as Black Panther and Shuri's mom. Well,
All the actors. That's crazy. Look at that. Look at the last part of Roddy's note on this. Look at all of the name recognizable actors that are in.
It's a beautiful thing.
Who's who?
Yeah. So Betty Shabazz is playing Queen Ramonda. It's a great day.
John Wick director David Leitch officially gonna give it to you.
Yeah. So apparently he's the new X-Men Deadpool 2 director.
More details emerge about Marvel's Inhumans TV series.
Which at this point, I don't remember what we knew and what we didn't know. But we know it's going to be about the royal family. So we already knew about the IMAX stuff. So
Michelle Yao may be the first actor to join Star Trek Discovery.
Woo!
I think since then they've already announced people. I think
they have,
which and is, her
yeah, coming to yeah. We get
her roles been revealed.
Right.
Which is that's weird because it's like okay, so are they making this more like so Michelle Yeoh, if you don't know, is a martial artist of some quite notes, has some very great movies in the past like Wing Chun and the like. So I'm like, are they going to throw some more action in it? Like, and also she was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you know. So I'm like, are they going to have a whole bunch of action like that going on in this? And
I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. She's not the captain. Yeah, she's not the captain of the lead ship, though.
Right, but she is going to be a captain of a ship.
Right.
So,
did you just go over the other people added?
No, that's the next one.
So they're adding Rince Anthony Rapp as a gay Starfleet officer and Hellboy's Doug Jones. Animated storyboard from Fox's New Mutants film is positively bonkers. Here's the first trailer for NBC's modern Wizard of Oz series, Emerald City.
Looks all right.
I'm actually, I think I'm going to watch that. Mm-hmm. I've got screeners for that, so. Oh,
okay, cool.
Trying to get into TV screenings.
So the reason why we have this in here, while it's not a comic related show, it is being written by Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue Skonick.
Wow.
Yeah. I actually wrote that article when that broke for CBR.
Cool.
But yeah, so I was like, oh, like the first, I think like 5 or 6 episodes are already like available
to screen.
Screening. Nice. So I was like,
Yeah, because that's soon.
Actually, I need to get on that. Yeah, I was saying I need to get on that because that debuts this. Is it this week, month?
I think so. Because we were at the doggone panel.
Were we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We were.
January 6th.
Okay, I got time.
Yeah, cool. Right. You know, just as the holiday is about to hit you square in the face.
Yeah.
You may want to start.
Was it a couple days ago? I went through and started like kind of stuff on project list thing to do. I guess I need to do a best of 2016, put down a list as well. How we're going to break that down. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Blank becomes new Ghost Rider.
Which we'd already talked about.
Avengers Infinity War is casting for extras in Atlanta.
Hello, you guys. You guys.
Get over there, Tim.
You guys.
Vikings Catherine Winnick wants to be Black Canary in the DC Films universe.
But first, they would have to put Green Arrow in the DC universe.
I was going to say, you're jumping the gun. But technically, as we progress, she doesn't have to be attached to Green Arrow.
That's true, but, you know.
See.
Yeah, I mean, she did show up in All-Star Batman and Robin, remember? With no Green Arrow.
Yeah, true.
I didn't read that.
Okay.
They could put, put in, who's the guy who's a Wildcat? Who's the one that trainer? They could just go that route?
Yeah, Wildcat.
Ted something, I forget. Yeah.
Let's see, the February 2017 solicits came out.
Yep.
And in comic book news, Unworthy Thor lost his artist and then got him back. Olivia, I think, taking like one issue off and then having some guest art help him with the series.
Did you say the Unworthy Thor?
Unworthy.
It's late. Damn it.
I know.
Donald Trump's going to appear in Savage Dragon, I guess.
I mean, you know, not the first for a political figure.
Yeah.
So, and not the first for him being in the comics or whatever.
We lived the past year of Marvel Comics with Upper Deck's new Marvel annual trading cards.
Wow, that's a shout out right there. Yeah,
right?
That's a flash from the past. Blast from the past.
I used to collect those.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. I think I still have some cards that are like based on covers.
Well, listen, I still have my entire X-Men trading card run that Jim Lee did.
Oh, nice.
Got the whole thing.
Stan Lee celebrates 75 years with Marvel and gets roasted on New Year's Eve.
Okay.
So we have the X-Men Resurrection announcements. We didn't even talk about the Inhumans ones, have we?
That's in there.
Okay. So, let's see. X-Men,
If you like card games, the X-Men are going to be a part of it's going to have an expansion in this card game called Munchkin. There's already a Marvel one. I need to find that. Anyway, okay. Keep moving on.
So we know who's the creative teams and the members of X-Men Blue and Gold. Dark Crystal sequel will be a comic, not a movie. Marvel teases Gwynpool teaming up with the Champions.
Ooh, why?
Don't know why. Don't care. Don't ruin them. Marvel's King of the Inhumans is getting his first ever solo comic.
And it's going to be a lot of not a lot of talking.
I know, right? Unless it's going to be sitting at his bar or whatever. Wait, is his bar in the quiet room, right?
Yes.
So it's just going to be in there?
Could be.
Actually, he's going to be in a prison or something, they said.
There'll be a lot of thought bubbles.
New DuckTales reboot plan, a vault's worth of tie-in merchandise.
So is Disney, and of course, they need to fill that other Uncle Scrooge money bin with something.
Oh, I need to read this article. Marvel's Amanat on what's next for Captain Marvel in the wake of Civil War II. Matthew Rosenberg and Javier Guerin are the creative team behind the relaunched Secret Warriors.
Oh, wow. I did not know this.
He's writing 3 books for Marvel now.
Wow.
Kingpin, Rocket Raccoon, and Secret Warriors.
Cool. Wait, is Kingpin getting an ongoing? Or are you saying he was the Civil War one?
No, Kingpin's in a series.
Oh, okay.
It's tied into that run-in with the Devils group of, like, Daredevil family of books now. Ah. That, Bullseye, and Elektra.
Shout at the Devil.
Though the Bullseye is just a limited series, I think. Skip that one. So, Iceman creative team is Sina Grace and Alessandro Vitti.
Sina.
Sina. Sina?
Yeah.
Sina Grace.
Da, 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 da. I'm sorry.
At least I think it's Sina Grace. I mean, so he was the one who did,
I keep thinking that's a woman's name when I see it. And every time I click the Twitter, I kind of see it, and it's a guy, and I'm like, whoa.
No. Which, I mean, I think they got the right person for, because I think he's actually gay. But, I'm trying to remember. There was a book that I talked about, like, probably a couple of years ago that he did, and it was kind of a, it had a video game thing, and now I'm drawing it. It was like, Burn the Orphanage. That's what it was, Burn the Orphanage, which was like 2 volumes, and it was a pretty good book. So
that sounds familiar.
Did we talk about that book? Yeah, I talked about it a while back when it happened. There was like 2 volumes, and it was like, it was basically, it was really fun. It was kind of a, not necessarily a parody, but it was kind of a take on like a Streets of Rage character and his friends. So it was pretty cool.
Cupola's DC Rebirth trade release schedule for 2017. DC Rebirth #1 is live on the library service.
Yeah, so you know what? If you don't have much money and you have a library card, check out Hoopla, which is the app which is basically the app the library uses for digital books, or one of them. Anyway, there's a couple.
Cool. Marvel vs. Capcom 4 is rumored.
Which I think it is set. Yeah, so PlayStation Experience is this weekend, and I think that's been confirmed that it's going to be there this weekend.
This is a reason for me to get a PS4. Are you kidding me? It's one of the only reasons I have a PS3, which was Marvel vs. Capcom 3 and the Ultimate, whatever one. So.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, they put out Marvel Ultimate Alliance fairly recently, or re-put back out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on sale this past weekend for like $20 a piece, but it's still out there, but the price is
a little high, right.
Yeah. However, if you're on Twitch, I did a stream last Monday of Marvel Ultimate Alliance, if you want to check that out.
And my understanding is that Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is still a popular game at the tournaments.
At Evo? Yeah. So, and that's probably going to, with this one, that'll probably...
Yeah, those are the kids that are constantly beating me when I play online.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Marvel vs. Capcom is kind of it's kind of crazier. It's a slightly crazier version of Street Fighter 4 with 3-on-3 tag matches. And it's if you have seizures, you might not want to play that game because it gets really, really crazy.
It does. Alrighty.
So now Amanat says Marvel still has more X-Men and Human books to announce. That's news to me.
There you go.
And Telltale's Guardians of the Galaxy game is official and coming soon.
Right. So this was a rumor a couple of weeks ago, and as of the Game Awards earlier tonight, we have found out that it's actually true. Now, we already knew that Marvel was going to be working with Telltale Games, makers of the Walking Dead series and Batman the Telltale series, which is also a good
is that like an RPG game. One where you like don't have to actually fight anyone, you just like
not necessarily RPG, but it is basically more story focused. So the Batman one, you're pretty much playing as Batman. You have some direct controls, you're going and making choices, you know, there is a lot of choices and there's a lot of dialogue, so you're basically just playing out a story with a little bit of gameplay in the midst. It's kind of the thing that Telltale's known for, And I know the next episode of that Batman series, I think, just came out. So I'm going to have to actually play it pretty soon. It's been pretty good so far. It's not a canon take on Batman, but it is a good Batman story. Like, you get a little detective things going on, so you have to kind of go around the room looking at clues and then putting them together, and then you go off and do some other stuff. And there's a little bit of fighting in it. That's some cool stuff. And it's episodic, so they're kind of breaking up in chunks. And that's where most of their games go. So I'm curious about what a Guardians of the Galaxy 1 would be, but they do pretty good stuff, so that'll be interesting.
All right. And that's it for the week.
All righty. Let us do our last ad read before we close out the show. Help us keep our podcast free and shop for your Christmas list on Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would during the Christmas season, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment. That helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat over here with the U.S. Avengers 50 variant covers is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. Is the Georgia one on there? Oh, there it is. U.S. Avenger. U.S. Agent is my representative.
We have Luke Cage for New York.
Boo. And Agent 70 is at Agent 70 on Twitter and Instagram. We'll be back next week.
Yes, we'll be back next week.
Next week we're here. The week after that we probably won't.
Yeah, we'll figure out exactly when we have a show then, because I think the holidays this year do not fall on a Thursday.
On a Sunday.
So we should be clear towards the end of the month.
So we are the Comic Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace.